Hi everyone, and welcome to today's reading of The New Human Revolution, Volume 2. We will be covering pages 48 to 68. So let's begin. Several of the students attending the general meeting had participated in the struggle against the revised US-Japan Security Treaty. 3 days earlier, however, the new treaty had gone into effect. The intense and often violent opposition movement now ebbed, and a sense of failure hung heavily over the students who had given themselves passionately to that cause. Shinichi Yamamoto did not want these cherished student division members to become needlessly sidetracked. A truly peaceful and democratic society would not be realized through radical and destructive revolution. It will be achieved through the gradual revolution of hope, known as Kosenrufu, a reformation firmly rooted in reality and based on the human revolution of each individual striving to cultivate the vast inner realm of life. Shinichi ended his speech voicing his heartfelt wish. Please become leaders in society who will work not only for your personal happiness, but also for the happiness of others. He held boundless hopes for the students' future, for they would be the vanguard with a mission to build a truly humanistic civilization under the banner of a new philosophy. Shinichi made the individual human being his central focus. It was the foundation on which he constructed his vision for the triumphant future of all humanity. The most crucial element for achieving such a future would be the presence of capable individuals. He had expressed his thoughts on this subject in an article titled People Capable of Contributing to World Peace in the magazine Ushio, the new scholarly journal of the organization's cultural department, which had gone into publication on July 2nd. In that article, Shinichi wrote, "In any age, country or society, the presence of talented people is of the greatest and most fundamental importance. President Josai Toda, on a guidance tour in Sendai, Miyagi Prefecture, stood at the ruins of Aoba Castle and declared, 'The warlords of the past went into battle with their castles as their stronghold. Now, the Soka Gakkai is advancing towards Kosenrufu with a castle of capable people as its bulwark.' The Gosho states, 'Since the law is wonderful, the person is worthy of respect.' In light of this passage, I would like our fellow members in the culture department to become people of outstanding caliber both in the Soka Gakkai and in society at large, giving full play to their own unique characteristics and qualities. Internationally too, the Japanese people today stand at an important crossroad, hope and pray that the day will come when those capable of contributing greatly to the world at large will make their appearance." It was an appeal that expressed his earnest longing for the widespread emergence of people of ability. The culture department had been formed by the Soka Gakkai in 1954 to undertake a diverse range of cultural activities. The publishing operation of the department's magazine, Ushio, was later set up as an independent publishing company. Today, as a monthly magazine that provides a comprehensive range of articles and commentaries, Ushio has become a leading opinion maker in Japanese media circles, promoting a fresh and creative awareness of humanism. Emerald coral reef seas stretched out below the plane window, with the breathtaking green islands of Okinawa visible in the distance. On the evening of July 16, in 1960, President Shinichi Yamamoto set foot for the first time on Okinawa, beginning a tour of that Japanese archipelago whose stalwart inhabitants were struggling to come to terms with a tragic past. Haunted by Okinawa's painful history, Shinichi had wanted to visit these islands since much before he had become president. During World War II, Japan's military leaders had deemed Okinawa as expendable in forestalling an eventual battle for Japan proper. Thus, Okinawa became the only part of Japan to experience bloody ground combat during the war, a struggle that involved even ordinary citizens. The fighting on Okinawa continued for more than 3 months. The intense shelling, which the locals came to call a storm of steel, ravaged the face of the archipelago beyond recognition, and nearly 120,000 civilians of then 600,000 population were killed. After the war, Okinawa was placed under US military occupation, which severely restricted the freedom of the local residents. Article 3 of the San Francisco Peace Treaty of 1951, which went into effect on April 28, 1952, ensured that Okinawa would remain under American control even after Japan regained its autonomy. As the Cold War between East and West deepened, Okinawa became indispensable to America as a strategic base for its military operations in the Pacific. It might even be said that the return of Japan's sovereignty had been contingent upon its ceding Okinawa to the United States. Thus, on two occasions, the Okinawan people had been forced to sacrifice themselves for Japan. In the American administration of Okinawa, military bases took priority over all else. In particular, the compulsory expropriation of land for the construction of such facilities led to grave infringements of the rights of the Okinawan people. In March 1960, the year Shinichi first visited the islands, it was announced that the 8 new Hawk missile bases would be established in Okinawa, and in May, the U.S. House of Representatives approved the construction of a Mace B missile base there as well. Construction of military installations accelerated so rapidly that by 1971, 1 year before Okinawa's return to Japan, such facilities occupied 26.5% of the total area of the main island of Okinawa. In the island's central region of Kadenason, now Kadenacho, military bases covered more than 80% of the total area. No wonder people began to comment, Okinawa is located on a U.S. military base. To transform the destiny of these islands and build a realm of lasting peace and prosperity, Shinichi was deeply and strongly resolved to establish a chapter in Okinawa. Shinichi sighed with deep emotion as he looked out on Okinawa. By strange coincidence, it was exactly 700 years since that momentous July 16 in 1260 when Nichiren Daishonin submitted his treatise, Risho Ankoku Ron, on establishing the correct teaching for the peace of the land in remonstration with the country's ruler. When this document was written, Japan was being ravaged by a succession of unusually serious fires, storms, earthquakes, droughts, and virulent epidemics. Witnessing these disasters and wishing to relieve the suffering they inflicted on the people, Nichiren Daishonin remonstrated with the country's most influential leader of the time, Hojo Tokiyoru. He urged him to embrace the Lotus Sutra, the true law, and reject erroneous teachings. In those days, the Nembutsu teaching of the Pure Land School of Buddhism had spread widely among the Japanese people. Viewing the world as a defiled realm, it expounded reciting of the name of the Buddha Amida in the form of mantra Namu Amida Butsu as the sole means for reaching the pure land of perfect bliss, said to lie in a region of the universe millions upon millions of Buddha lands to the west. Religion forms a basic foundation for people's lives. A philosophy such as the Pure Land School, which regards this world as an impure land, cannot possibly inspire hope. Rather, it will cause people to view the world with a sense of futility and powerlessness. A teaching that seeks an otherworldly paradise after death in some distant region of the universe is closing its eyes to reality. Moreover, by promoting escapism and resignation, it may even make death seem desirable. Such a philosophy cannot bring forth in people either a desire to challenge squarely the task of perfecting themselves or the constructive energy to contribute to society. Through Rishyo Onko Kuron, the Daishonin admonished the day's most influential ruler and strove to guide him to reform his way of life. He also denounced the Nembutsu teaching, declaring, "It would be better simply to outlaw this one evil," and urged the country to reject it and embrace the true law. Religion transforms an individual's consciousness, spirit, and inner state of life. Depending on the religion, people can become strong or weak, wise or foolish. Their lives can become constructive or destructive. An internal change in the lives of human beings brings forth the creative force and can momentously change the environment and society. This is the principle of realizing a peaceful society through the propagation of true Buddhism, that is Rishyo Onkoku. July 16th was also the day on which, in 1945, the United States exploded the world's first atomic bomb in a test blast conducted in the New Mexico desert. News of this success was immediately relayed to U.S. President Harry S. Truman. The following day, July 17, the news was also conveyed to British Prime Minister Winston Churchill, then attending the Potsdam Conference. Churchill was given the coded message, "Baby satisfactorily born." The atomic bomb was the ominous offspring of the demonic nature of human life. Now, missiles tipped with nuclear warheads were about to be deployed here in Okinawa. Shinichi mused, "If the people of Okinawa, who have suffered a bitter and tragic past, can attain happiness through Nichiren Daishonin's Buddhism, this will prove that people all over Japan can become happy." As the plane landed at Naha International Airport, he vowed to build a paradise of peace in Okinawa. Shinichi had decided to visit these islands mid-July because he felt he could not properly appreciate the day-to-day hardships of the local members who had to struggle under the scorching sun unless he went there at the hottest time of the year. Some of the senior leaders, worried about Shinichi's health, had urged him to visit Okinawa in a cooler season, but he had refused to change his plans. Okinawa's capital, Naha, had received almost no rainfall since June 20th. But just before Shinichi's arrival, a squall had brought rain. The green grass revived, and a cool, refreshing breeze swept the island to welcome Shinichi and his party. Nearly 200 local members had crowded into the airport terminal building. Cheers erupted as Shinichi emerged from the plane and stood at the top of the stairs. In the terminal, Shinichi and those accompanying him had to present their passports and clear an immigration check, driving home the fact that Okinawa was under U.S. administration. Technically, then, this visit to Okinawa marked Shinichi's first trip out of the country. When Shinichi appeared in the airport lobby, Fukuyasu Takami, the Okinawa district chief, was waiting to greet him. "Sensei," Takami exclaimed, his face beaming with joy. Seeing him, Shinichi said with a smile, "I've finally made it." These words brought tears to Takami's eyes. He had been waiting for this day for a long time. Takami had been the first Soka Gakkai member in Okinawa. During World War II, he worked as a civilian employee for the Japanese Army's Secret Service Agency on mainland China. After the war, he opened a souvenir shop in the Tokyo suburb of Tachikawa. His customers were mainly from the Allied occupation forces stationed in Japan. As the number of US military personnel began to decline, however, his business started to suffer. He then hit on the idea of moving his business to Okinawa with its large population of US military personnel. He also thought he might make Okinawa a base to expand his business into Southeast Asia in the future. Around this time, an acquaintance told him about the Soka Gakkai. At first, he felt some resistance to taking faith, but was eventually won over by his friend's enthusiasm. He started practicing rather doubtfully, making a pact with his friend. "I'll try it for 6 months, but if I don't get any benefit in that time, I'll stop." Takami soon experienced his first benefit of faith. He had been trying to sell his house so that he could move to Okinawa, but had been unsuccessful. After taking faith, however, he sold it for an unexpectedly high price. He was also fortunate enough to find an excellent location for his shop in a busy shopping area in Naha at favorable terms. That was in 1954. With this experience under his belt, Takami sincerely exerted himself in faith while corresponding with leaders in Tokyo to seek guidance. As he came to understand the suffering of the people of Okinawa, his sense of mission to widely spread the Daishonin's teachings there deepened. Wishing to change the island's destiny, he boldly strode in the vanguard of propagation. Takami was surprised at the deeply entrenched Okinawan custom of taking decisions based on divinations of mediums known as yuta, or fortune tellers called sanjinso. "This won't do," he thought. "The people have to become wise." He eagerly studied the Soka Gakkai handbook Guide to Propagation and told those with whom he became acquainted that a religion could be either true or erroneous, profound or shallow. Some eventually expressed a wish to join the Soka Gakkai, but there was still a great hurdle to be overcome. In addition to a deep-rooted faith in ancestor worship, the Okinawan people had a strong distrust of the Japanese mainland. Thus, they were not inclined to accept the religion propagated by the Soka Gakkai, coming as it did from the mainland. "We're not going to pray to any god of the Yamatonchu, Japanese who lived on the mainland," was their retort, using the Okinawan expression for mainland Japanese. Takami heard such protests time and again. Yet, tenaciously, he continued to engage people in dialogue about Buddhism, and the number of members steadily grew. The chapters on the Japanese mainland also extended their activities to include Okinawa. As a result, 4 years after Takami's arrival in Okinawa, the membership crossed 1,000 households. The previous year, 1959, had seen the formation of Okinawa District under the umbrella of Tokyo's Kamata chapter, with Takami being appointed as district chief. The organization in Okinawa was growing so rapidly that several hundred households were joining the Soka Gakkai each month. When Shinichi Yamamoto was inaugurated as president on May 33, 1960, Takami had begun to pray in earnest that he would visit Okinawa. Traveling the islands to rally the members' support for this cause, Takami would declare, "President Yamamoto is the leader of the Kosen Ryufu movement. So let's welcome him by creating a wave of propagation." As a result, Okinawa achieved the top result in propagation activities nationwide for the first 6 months of 1960. One cannot possibly describe Takami's joy at seeing Shinichi set foot upon the soil of Okinawa. "Welcome, Sensei." This was all he could manage before his voice became choked with emotion. "I'm here to work. I'm going to put 3 years' effort into 3 days," declared Shinichi, slapping Takami heartily on the shoulder. Shinichi Yamamoto and the 6 other Soka Gakkai leaders who accompanied him to Okinawa left the airport and headed towards their lodging for the night, a small inn run by a member. Soon after they reached, Shinichi talked with Fuku Yasu Takami and other local leaders, asking them in detail about the situation there. Takami described how the Okinawan people had been forced to submit to such actions as the compulsory appropriation of their land for the construction of military bases, and said it was their fervent wish that Okinawa be returned to Japan. Shinichi learned that the membership in Okinawa had now reached 7,000 households and that experiences of the benefit of faith abounded. He commended the members from the bottom of his heart for their valiant struggle. "Your efforts are truly praiseworthy," he said. "You've worked very hard. With the emergence of so many children of the Buddha, Okinawa will definitely change. I can't wait to see how it will have developed in 10 or 20 years." The faces of these champions of peace glowed with enthusiasm and vitality. That evening, the leaders from Tokyo were to split up to attend guidance meetings at 4 locations. Immediately afterwards, a leaders' meeting was scheduled for men's and women's division group leaders and above. After the local leaders left the inn, Shinichi had a quick dinner with the others in his party. Soka Gakkai General Director Koichi Harayama, Vice General Director Kiyoshi Jujo, Guidance Chief Hisao Seki, Youth Division Chief Aisuke Akizuki, Women's Division Headquarters Staff Haruko Taoka, and Young Women's Division Chief Toki Tani. As they ate, Jujo asked Shinichi, "The members in Okinawa are filled with energy, brimming with benefit and joy, and making terrific progress. How could they achieve such growth even though we at the headquarters couldn't give them much guidance, since Okinawa is technically a foreign country?" "The members here have been striving with the realization that they are the only ones who can bring happiness to Okinawa," Shinichi responded. "They are not doing this because someone told them to, but because each of them feels a sense of responsibility and mission in playing an active role to achieve Kosenrufu. That is why they feel joy, receive benefit, and make progress." "I see. It all comes down to having the awareness of being personally responsible," said Jujo, nodding. "Actually, during my days at the Naval Academy, we often went out sailing. There was always someone who would get terribly seasick. But if that person took the rudder, he would become perfectly fine. It's probably because of the sense of responsibility and tension that comes with the realization that everything rests on your shoulders. From this I learned that people get seasick because they assume the passive attitude that they are merely being carried along instead of feeling like they are steering the boat." Shinichi listened with keen interest to Jujo's story. "That may indeed be so," he said, nodding in agreement. "In promoting Kosenrufu activities too, people's commitment and actions will vary greatly, depending on whether they are willing to take on the responsibility of steering the boat or are content merely to ride along as passengers. Those who intend to be only passengers will do nothing but criticize and complain about the boat or the people at the helm whenever anything goes wrong. Such people can't develop themselves. Back in the days when I was employed in President Toda's business, I resolved to take full responsibility for both the company and the Soka Gakkai. At the time, I was just an ordinary employee, and I had no position in the Soka Gakkai. But it's not a question of position or standing, it's a matter of commitment. Having resolved to assume full responsibility, I didn't have the slightest complaint, even when my wages were in arrears. Moreover, I gave constant thought not only to perfecting the department I worked in, but to the growth of the company as a whole. I believe this sense of commitment stands me in good stead today." Turning towards Youth Division Chief Aisuke Akizuki, Shinichi continued. "President Oda once related the following story. A factory had gone bankrupt and its plant and equipment were seized and put up for auction. When a successful bidder came to collect the machine he had purchased, one of the factory workers desperately pleaded, 'I have lovingly cared for this machine over the years. If you are going to take it away, please take me with it.' After relating the story, President Oda remarked, 'How admirable is his attitude. He has a craftsman's spirit. He does not think of himself as a hireling, one who works only because he is paid. Instead, he is ready to share his destiny with his machine. The love he displays for his machine clearly expresses his passion for his work. President Rudd found the nature of one who works only for money utterly repulsive. He maintained that young people, in particular, who possessed such an attitude lacked prospects for the future. The same applies to the work of Kosen Rufu. Whatever the field, you cannot hope to master anything with a mercenary mentality. Young people must always challenge everything with the spirit that they are masters of their own destiny. And doesn't the word master imply a person who takes full responsibility? Shinichi smiled cheerfully. He especially wanted to instill in the youth division members, the future leaders of the Suka Gakkai, an awareness that they were the main players of the Kosen Rufu movement. Shinichi's responsibility as Soka Gakkai president was to take people on board the great ship Soka Gakkai and safely ferry them to the landfall of Kosen Rufu, where peace and happiness prevailed. To protect the ship so that it could weather heavy fog and stormy nights on violently surging seas, and thus deliver the members to the port of happiness, required a crew of many diverse talents. Indeed, Shinichi, the captain, could be felled by illness at any moment. For this reason, he was trying desperately to raise capable people who could take responsibility for the ship with the same determination and commitment as his own. None of the other leaders, however, could truly perceive what was in his heart. For one thing, they could not comprehend the grand vision he had conceived for Kosen Rufu. For another, they were blithely complacent in the thought that because Shinichi was still only 32, there was as yet no need to be worried about the future, especially when they witnessed the vigour and energy with which he threw himself into the fray. It only strengthened their conviction that everything would be fine if they simply left things up to him. Having finished their evening meal, Shinichi Yamamoto and the others went to attend the divisional guidance meetings to which they had been assigned. Afterwards, they attended a leaders' meeting at Komyoji, the Nichiren Shoshu Temple in Naha. The completion ceremony for Komyoji Temple had been held that March. The Soka Gakkai had built and donated Komyoji in response to the members' impassioned request for a temple to facilitate the bestowal of Gohonzon upon the growing membership. Fukuyasu Takami and the other local leaders had walked themselves lame to find a site for the temple. Also, because Okinawa was under US administration, they needed to get permission to bring construction materials from Japan, a process that required countless trips to the local government offices. Thanks to such devoted efforts by members, the first overseas temple was established in Okinawa. At the leaders' meeting held there that evening, Shinichi proposed forming Okinawa chapter. Actually, if you're all in agreement, why don't we make tomorrow's gathering the inaugural meeting of the Okinawa chapter? Here in Okinawa, you have members who currently belong not only to the Okinawa district of Tokyo's Kamata chapter, but to more than 40 different chapters around Japan. I would now like to bring all of you together under a new Okinawa chapter. The sun rises in the east and moves towards the west, illuminating all in its path. Similarly, starting with Okinawa, other chapters will eventually emerge in each part of Southeast Asia, in Taiwan, Hong Kong, and India. I ask you, the members of Okinawa, to be trailblazers in this mission. What do you say? The meeting place erupted in applause. Everyone was overjoyed at the formation of Okinawa chapter. Shinichi Yamamoto continued. I ask Mr. Fukuyasu Takami, who has been working hard as the Okinawa district chief, to take on the position of chapter chief. The organization in Okinawa began with only Mr. Takami. A path exists because someone has paved the way. In light of his achievements, I think there is no one more suitable for this position. Don't you agree? There was another surge of applause. As for the other chapter positions, we will discuss them this evening. I hope you will trust us to make the best decisions. I also ask that you wholeheartedly support Chapter Chief Takami. If you support the central figure, you in turn will be supported. This is the Buddhist law of cause and effect. If you talk behind the backs of those who have become leaders or hold grudges against them, you will be destroying the organization that has emerged in accord with the Buddha's decree. And ultimately, you yourself will become miserable. I also request those appointed as leaders to warmly embrace and look after the members on my behalf. To create a beautiful sphere of human relationships is itself proof of Kosen Rufu. Unity is the key that will determine whether Okinawa chapter develops from this point on. Takami's eyes grew moist as he listened to Shinichi's words. Only 6 years had passed since he moved to Okinawa, and now a chapter flag would finally be raised high above these islands that had suffered such pain and grief. He silently vowed, "I will do everything in my power to bring happiness to the people of Okinawa." On the Chinese mainland during World War II, Takami had come perilously close to being killed several times. Once, he drove over a landmine, the explosion hurling him and the car into the muddy waters of a nearby river. When he finally struggled to the water's surface, he was met with a barrage of gunfire. Luckily, he escaped. Through first-hand experience, he knew the horror and tragedy of war all too well. Moreover, on his arrival in Okinawa, an island dominated by military bases, he learned that a war was still being waged there, the Cold War between East and West. Takami now felt a strong conviction that his life's purpose was to realize Kosen Rufu in Okinawa. Shinichi and the leaders accompanying him returned to their inn. Takami and others joined them to discuss the formation of districts and groups, as well as the appointment of leaders. The discussion centered primarily on whom to select as the chapter women's division chief. A basic proposal for Okinawa chapter leadership had already been discussed at the Soka Gakkai headquarters. Tamako Uima had been recommended to become chapter women's division chief. Tamako and her husband had started practicing Nichiren Daishonin's Buddhism in Tokyo in 1952. Her husband, Toshio, a graduate of a prestigious university, had suffered a business failure and also had tuberculosis. 4 years after taking faith, the couple had moved to Okinawa, where the husband came from. Tamako had steadily exerted herself in faith and gained profound benefits. Her husband was earnest and dedicated, but his work commitments made it difficult for him to take part in many activities. If Tamako were appointed, she would be extremely busy, having to travel all over Okinawa. She could not do this without her husband's understanding and support. Consequently, Shinichi thought it would be best to first obtain the husband's consent before appointing her. That evening, Shinichi had invited Mr. and Mrs. Uima to the inn where he was staying. Toshio, a handsome man with distinctive features, wore a tie despite the heat. After exchanging greetings, Shinichi got straight to the point. "We, the leaders of the Soka Gakkai, are determined to transform, through the power of the mystic law, these ill-fated islands of Okinawa into a realm of lasting peace where the people will never again be victims of war. To achieve this ideal, we would like to ask your wife to be the central figure for the women's division here. I realize that this may impose somewhat on your family situation, but what do you say?" Toshio Uema replied immediately, "That's fine. You have my full approval. My dear wife will be working for the happiness of the Okinawan people, so I will do everything to support her." Toshio had lost a younger brother in the fighting on Okinawa, so he was doubly fervent in his desire for peace. He looked at his wife, who sat next to him, and held out his hand to her. "Do your best, Tamako," he said. Nodding, his wife clasped his hand tightly. Large tears welled up in her eyes. It was like a scene from a beautiful painting. To be a leader in the promotion of Kosen Rufu entails extraordinary hard work. However, the efforts of family members who support that leader behind the scenes also defy description. Shinichi never forgot to pay attention to those supporting others behind the scenes. His consideration was based on his strong sense of responsibility for Kosenrufu. By the time the contingent of leaders from Tokyo finished their discussions on the formation of the new chapter, the sky was already beginning to grow light. From early morning of July 17, a long line of people formed in front of the Naha Commercial High School, the venue for the inaugural meeting of Okinawa chapter to be held that evening. Members from all over Okinawa, who had longed for this day, began arriving in rapid succession. Some had happily travelled all the way from Kunigami and Nago, in the northern part of Okinawa's main island, as well as from outlying islands such as Miyakojima and Yaeyama. By 10 a.m., an hour before the scheduled start, the line of members stretched all the way to the front of the Ryukyu government office, now the Okinawa prefectural office. 1 month earlier, on June 19, during a visit by U.S. President Eisenhower, the area in front of the government building had been filled with a sea of demonstrators demanding the return of Okinawa to Japan. Eisenhower had originally been scheduled to visit Japan on June 19, but the Japanese government had requested him to postpone his visit following violent demonstrations all over Japan over the imminent ratification of the new U.S.-Japan Security Treaty. Having cancelled his plans to visit Japan, President Eisenhower made a two-hour stopover at Okinawa on his way from Taiwan to South Korea. Like all the people of Okinawa, the members gathered at the inaugural chapter meeting also strongly desired the return of Okinawa to Japan. However, their aim was not merely to liberate the islands from American control, but on a more fundamental level, from its sorrowful, tragic karma. They were about to demonstrate that a great human revolution in the life of an individual could eventually change the destiny of an entire nation and transform the fate of the entire human race. In the car, en route to the meeting place, Shinichi Yamamoto recalled that it was exactly 3 years to the day since his release from jail. He had been arrested on trumped-up charges in connection with the Osaka vote-buying incident. On that July 17, he had emerged from the Osaka detention center after 15 days' imprisonment. This confinement became the impetus for Shinichi to pledge himself to a lifelong struggle to protect the common people against the devilish potential of authority. The history of the Soka Gakkai has been a record of fierce struggles fought against devilish authority. The first president, Tsunesaburo Makiguchi, as well as his successor and the second president, Josei Toda, were both imprisoned in a crackdown by the military government during World War II. The elderly Makiguchi died in prison. Okinawa was the greatest victim of the war caused by those same authorities. Shinichi entered the meeting place, cherishing a deep resolve to open the way to lasting peace and happiness for his beloved friends here. That brings us to the end of today's reading. I will see you next time. Have a great day.